Ian McEwan's new novel is called Saturday. We like that word in the title. The story unfolds over 24 hours in London in February of 2003. The protagonist, Dr. Henry Perrone, is a surgeon. He awakes unexpectedly at 3:30 in the morning and glimpses a small blip of history. During the next 23 hours, Dr. Perrone will play squash, feel his own pulse, make love to his wife, wonder if his son and daughter still love him, become the object of a crime, make fish stew, restore a life, and maybe a little bit of his own. Ian McEwan, who's won England's esteemed Booker Prize, joins us from our studios in London. Thank you for being with us. What were some of the challenges and for that matter, opportunities of containing a narrative in 24 hours?
Well, setting a book within 24 hours obviously has some firm literary precedents, and everybody, of course, thinks of Joyce and Virginia Woolf. I suppose I drew less on Joyce or Virginia Woolf than from your own country, Saul Bellow, whose Herzog I've always admired, largely for its sort of wonderful digressive qualities, and John Updike's Rabbit Tetralogy, also, I think, one of the most accomplished pieces of work in the last 50 years in American fiction, and also a great celebrator of the possibilities of fiction written in the present tense.
Does containing the novel within 24 hours have a way of impelling the plot?
Well, I think it forces on you a decision. You either simply say, well, this is going to be the picture of an unexceptional day, and you concentrate on the sort of poetry of the moment, if you like. And that was very much Virginia Woolf's decision, say, in something like Mrs. Dalloway. Or you artificially propel the plot forward. And I've used something of a thriller form. My neurosurgeon has a little bit of a run-in with a street thug whose name is Baxter. Their cars collide, not dangerously, but enough to scratch each other. They have to get out. They have to negotiate whose fault it was. And Henry Perrone makes the mistake of, well, really humiliating this man on the street and does so with repercussions for all of his family later in the day when Baxter forces himself on a family reunion. So I suppose I like novels in which something happens. I'm not so much a novelist of the texture alone of existence. But that said, I tried to get in, too, something of what I regard as the poetry of the white noise, of the digressive quality of thought. Even in that moment in the street encounter when Baxter strikes a blow at the neurosurgeon, Henry Perrone, Henry has time, even in those microseconds, to consider how even the enzymes, the neurotransmitters in the brain can cause such distress to and such damage to love and hope and dreams, and yet we have no way of really understanding it. No ethics of the very, very small.
Some of the most extraordinary passages in the book, as you're touching on it now, have to do with the way in which Dr. Perrone sees the world differently by virtue of being a neurosurgeon and his education. The encounter, when you mention the humiliation, if it doesn't give away a plot point, it's not a neurosurgeon saying to a street thug, what a silly twit you are, but he uses his medical education to recognize a weakness in the man.
Yes.
that makes him feel vulnerable.
That's right. He diagnoses Huntington's disease in Baxter and takes a guess, an educated guess, that Baxter's two sidekicks will not know about this. And indeed, he's correct. He escapes a beating up in the street, but at the price, as I say, of humiliating a man who lives by the code of the street and for whom, respect is important, and therefore there will be repercussions.
The surgery sections are extraordinary, and I just have to ask, do you have any medical education? What did you undertake to be so detailed and eloquent in those sections?
Well, I'm very lucky in being introduced to a senior neurosurgeon at our main neurosurgical hospital here in London in Queen Square, Neil Kitchen, and for 2 years I met him, asked him about his week, and then began to stand at his elbow while he performed major neurosurgery. use the changing room, deplorable, messy changing room, to get into the scrubs that I too was obliged to wear. Rather fancied myself as a surgeon, actually, once I had those scrubs on, saw myself in the mirror. The trick I noticed with neurosurgeons, I think surgeons generally, is, you know, they have a deep V cut to the neck. What you have to do is angle it so that your chest hair just pokes through there. It's a sort of artful piece of dressage that I think all surgeons have to attend to. I realize that, you know, we think we work hard, but we are effectively on holiday compared to these guys.
Did it ever happen that some patient is about to go under the knife and looks around and recognizes the anesthesiologist and certainly knows his or her neurosurgeon and then looks at you in your scrubs and say, "Who's that?" And the doctor has to say, "Oh, don't mind him, he's just a novelist"?
Well, yes, and if he said that's Ian McEwan, they might not need an anesthetic. No, in fact, there was a moment, this rather filled me with pleasure, constantly during an operation, various people would come in and out of the operating theatre, and I'd been there for about 3 hours watching, and two fifth-year medical students came in, and they both came over to me, seeing that I was not doing anything, and said, "Excuse us, doctor, but I wonder if you could fill us in what this procedure is and what's going on." And so I said, "Yeah, come over here," and I took them over to the light box, and I said, "Well, you know, we're going in through the through this region here, and this is an aneurysm, and he's going to clip the neck of it." And I gave a very good account of someone deeply in the know. And I don't think these students were ever going to get anything but a C- in neurosurgery in my hands. But anyway, they went away sort of pretending to be satisfied.
Mr. McEwan, your protagonist, Dr. Perrone, is a faithful husband and surgeon. His wife is accomplished and loving. His daughter is devoted and talented. His son is artistic and audacious. Doesn't get along too great with his father-in-law, but his father-in-law has his moments of grace in the book. Even the thug, Baxter, has a moment of redeeming grace. Is it harder to write a book where everybody involved is so bloody decent?
Well, it is hard to write a book in which happiness and pleasure could be part of your worldview. And I was interested in the ways in which we can compartmentalize our existence. So we can be fretting one moment about international terrorism and global poverty and impending war, and then, you know, half an hour later raising a glass with friends and listening to music and making love or whatever it is. And I thought, let's try and see what it would be like to actually make this a celebration of, say, work, of food, of wine, of love, of sex, of the curious pain pleasure of watching your children become young adults. So it's a matter of braiding these things, because I think this is what contemporary life is about for people in the first world. We have extraordinary privileges in terms of our access to machines and knowledge and, you know, fresh orange juice and coffee and shelter and warmth. And we have, running in parallel, an extraordinary set of anxieties and guilt and genuine concern for the, you know, future shape of the planet. I mean, a book like this, you've offered the future a useful photograph of a day and the imagination of the early 21st century and its hopes and fears and so on, as well as its pleasures.
Mr. McEwan, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Speaking with us from London, Ian McEwan. His new novel is Saturday.